with Christy Marie and Julie.
Hi there, I'm Christy Marie.
I'm Julie.
And around here, they call me Mama.
Yes, they do. And we're your in-house certified law of attraction coaches.
Really?
And much more
really?
Than that.
So much more. As in so much more that we now call it More Life with the Girlfriend.
Yes. And
don't you just love the song, though?
I do. I feel like, yeah,
you know,
girl.
Back in France in the 60s, you know, we kind of wore our little berets, and then we smoked these long cigarettes.
And no one got cancer.
and we had on our little black and white T-shirts and white white mime gloves.
And everybody was so artistic. And everybody's words meant so much.
And we had croissants.
Yes.
And we all we used to go and to hang out at Julia Child's apartment.
Sure. And we'd all use a snap instead of clap. That's right.
We snapped, and because we would read poems.
Yes.
And we're going to have a poet on tonight.
We are having a poet on it tonight. And it's so funny. We're interviewing at the half-hour mark. We're interviewing Robert McDowell. He's a poet, activist, speaker, storyteller, mentor. I love in his website he talks about, he goes, I'm all for collaborating, working with, what's his name, is collaborating. And here's the thing, Mom. Today, I feel, since we're interviewing Robert McDowell,
mm-hmm.
and we've been reading about poetry, and
mm-hmm.
I've been doing all this,
mm-hmm.
I feel that the words I want to use are not available to
I
me.
I know. It's like it's like a brain fart right
exactly.
now. Oh, my God.
I don't know. Can we not say brain fart when he comes on?
No, I'll try. We'll just, how about brain gas?
You know, my cerebral
yes.
gas.
a synapse firing.
Yes. Well, you know, he's spoken at the UN in Geneva just this year, March 2014, and he mentions, men are here to collaborate, to support, and to celebrate women. And I know that's what we're going to do tonight.
Wow.
You're going to ask him to be an honorary girlfriend, I'm sure.
Oh, I definitely will ask him.
And
he will not turn me down.
He will
I
not.
He will do as I say.
I will not be ignored. I'm telling you right now.
That's right. He will honor the divine feminine in me.
If I have to remind him several times.
Yeah, I may have to nag a little bit. That's what I meant.
Well, it's interesting because learning more about him, I find him to be similar to you in your past history,
mm-hmm.
your family's growing up.
He even looks like my brother, I think.
Oh, he totally does.
Yeah.
He totally does. And
we could be from the same, clan in some sense.
I think that's true. I
mm-hmm.
think it could possibly be.
Mm-hmm.
And the same energy, at least. And he
mm-hmm.
really is into energy and how words have energy. And his poetry have energy. And what I admire about him is that he doesn't sugarcoat anything. He tells it as it is
mm-hmm.
in his own words. But there's not even a sugarcoating in that. Sometimes I feel that we're always guarded, or we always guard our language, so not to offend, not to show our darkest weakness.
Oh, isn't that true?
And
to be either politically correct or sound totally sane.
Right.
We must be sane. We must not show weakness.
Right. Or know that we're just all holding on
mm-hmm.
for dear life. And
mm-hmm.
and he comes across like he really just lets it all hang out. And we see into his soul through his poetry. And I feel a little intimidated, to be honest with you. So it's going to be a wonderful half hour. And hopefully
so
I won't.
Here's what I'm going to say
yes.
for you then. So let's hold the intimidation up and let it become transparent. Let you be able to take a deep breath and allow it to transform you.
I love that. And it's funny because during our investigative work on poet, tonight it has led us onto this path, this wonderful path of talking about old mystical saints that you learned as in
mm-hmm.
high school.
Oh, in grade school.
In grade school.
Oh, grade school.
Oh,
come on.
Yeah.
High school, come on.
They didn't hold back
this
those
was,
mystical
this grade
saints.
School. Yeah.
They scared the crap out of you guys. Come on. And learning about St. Teresa of Avila
mm-hmm.
and She talks about, and reading Wikipedia, God knows that's correct, but talking about one of her experiences as seeing, not cherub, but...
the seraphim.
Thank you. Poking a spear through her heart as a transformational, spiritual transformational, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because all day long, my heart's been hurting, and I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
And but so I'm going to claim that I'm having a spiritual awakening.
Yes.
And I also claim right now I don't need to have my heart hurt because of it.
You do not need to.
I can rise above that.
You know, these mystics, these Christian mystics, St. John of the Cross, St. Teresa Avila, I mean, they were in the 1500s, the 1600s. And, you know, let's just claim that we've evolved since then and that we live in grace. And we live in mercy. And we don't have to go flying around the room. We don't have to have the angel, the seraphim and the cherubim come down with a burning spear.
We don't.
A spear. What are the two?
Yeah, our spear.
But, you know, pierce our hearts with it to love God more. We just don't have to do that anymore.
I thank you, and I agree. We do not have to do that anymore.
But it's nice to see where you came from a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Why not? I was going to say something, and now I can't remember, but that's okay.
Mm.
But
how is your day, other than your heart hurting? Your heart, let's just say your heart is being opened.
To a deeper chamber of love.
Deeper chamber, activated.
Which is always what you talk about, which I love. It's funny talking about these mystics, these, and then having you in my life for a long time since I've been born, never being shying away from that.
Right.
And... me not, I'm embracing it, but it's never been there for me.
Right.
You know, like they say, the gift always passes a generation. Oh, man. You know.
Wait, what? Wait, what?
Just like red hair? That's awful. That's no fun. I would have liked your red hair and your gifts and your psychic abilities. But no, thanks, Mom.
Well, you know, you had to come from a heartbreaking family.
You know what?
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Well, I
spared you from that,
yes,
darling.
Yes, you did. Today, you know, we live near Dixon. We live out in the country, but we live near Dixon, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And Dixon's famous for a lot of things. It's famous for, most recently, we've had Rita Crumwell, and she was the comptroller that stole over $56 million from the city of Dixon, Illinois.
CNN even did a report on her.
Yes.
I think it's the most ever.
It is.
Yeah.
They know so far. My feeling is they're all out there.
Yeah. Somebody's just one race horse away.
Exactly. And now we all feel like fools still because, you know, obviously she couldn't afford everything she has in her $80,000 salary and her horse farms and all that stuff. But we're also known for Ronald Reagan and the
boyhood home of Ronald Reagan. Yes. We have a big statue erected to him.
Yes, erected.
And he's riding a horse.
Yes.
He's erected riding a horse.
Yes. And I find it oddly attractive. I don't know.
Yeah.
I am, you know, I'm explored back in that time, and I feel like maybe one day I could just...
ride a horse.
Right, or see young Ronald Reagan come through the prairie on his horse.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be lovely? Or save me in the Rock River, as we did also. He was a lifeguard. So.
That's right, he was a lifeguard. And this week, Dixon also got bison. Is that how you call it?
Bison? I call it bison. I don't know if it's bison or bison.
Well, maybe because I'm Italian.
Yeah, bison.
I go, bison! We've got the bison, hey!
I was with a friend this weekend. I was with Doug and his sister, and we were talking about the bison, and you had mentioned in the article in the paper that says they have to be separated from people for a whole year before we can come and have them close to the road and we can see them.
Right.
And we both go, I wonder why that is. And Beth, with much certainty and confidence, says, oh, they'll get too tame otherwise. And we're like, tame? My first thought was, what are they going to do, come home with us? I mean, what does that mean to get too tame? So I don't know if it's
true. The deer and the No, no, not the bison play. During the antelope.
Yes. So who knows why they had to be separated? Maybe because it puts less stress on them.
Mm-hmm.
They've had a stressful travel.
Yeah. They just went, you know, it just takes time to get
right
into your surroundings.
And this brought me to the events of today, which in Dixon we have this beautiful old cemetery like most towns do, and they had a cemetery walk where they had six or seven people dress up in old garb, acting out the person at the cemetery, and it was all related to Dixon.
Well, I mean, they were in costume,
right,
being the dead people in the cemetery.
Yes, thank you.
Yes.
Yes.
Because it kind of was like a Halloween kind of scary.
Right.
You called me Scary D'Antoni this weekend.
I did call you Scary D'Antoni.
Yeah. Every time I say scary now, I think of that.
Do you?
But go ahead, darling.
I don't know if you want to bring up the story where I call you scary. And most daughters will know that if you have an Italian mother, there are moments when they become scary. just moments. And you know to back away fast. Especially when they're only one generation from total scary.
Right.
And you broke the cycle.
Yes.
And Robert McDowell talks about that as well.
That's my story in the Unwavering Strength series.
Yes.
It's about breaking the cycle.
For sure.
And emphasis on breaking. You know what I'm saying, kid? Hey, Paisan.
Breaking, but yet not separating. You broke it, but the pieces are still right there.
Yeah, it was a clean break.
Yeah. Exactly. And so we went and we got there, and you walk in, it's raining, and it's quite beautiful. It's about 55 degrees, and it's raining, and the colors are starting to pop really vividly on the trees. It's a beautiful old cemetery. And we're standing there, and unfortunately, we're leaving ourselves just an hour and a half before the Bears game starts. And if you know anything about Bears games in this area, well, at least with Doug's life and family, we must watch the Bears game.
Mm-hmm.
It's religious. It's spiritual.
Mm-hmm. It's a religious experience.
Yes.
Like last week they lost, and I heard Doug screaming, "There is no God."
There is no God.
Right.
Well, because I was trying to console him, and I had brought something spiritual to the plate,
mm-hmm,
and he was like, "You know there is no God." And I was like, all right, now if the Bears would have won, I think he would have said, "Thank you,
think
God."
I think the door may have been open.
The door, a little window, a little light when it came in.
With the seraphim and the cherubim.
Yes.
The golden light.
And so, and anyway, we're there at the cemetery, and we're waiting. And unfortunately, we're waiting for a half hour for our tour to start. And they're waiting for more people to come so that they can have fewer tours but more people in a group. So now we have about 30 people in our group. I mean, it's a little high, maybe 25. And it was really cute, wide variety of people. But there was this one couple that looked like they were from, like, a different country, like Ireland. I mean, literally, they had an accent and everything. And they both had blonde hair, but they're two young baby girls, probably 2 and 3. Both had red hair, or
mm-hmm,
one and two had red, beautiful red hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, that's so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go, and the first stop is a man not dressed like the character,
mm-hmm,
because he is the great-great-great-great-grandson of B.F. Shaw. B.F. Shaw. Benjamin Flowers Shaw.
Is she wearing Benjamin Button Shaw?
No, wasn't Benjamin Button Shaw. Benjamin Flower Shaw, who started our local newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the day, this is how old he was, he ran the Pony Express in the area from Galena to Rock Island. And that was only around for 18 months before the Telegraph came into play,
mm-hmm,
and shut everything down for the Pony Express.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
dang
what our paper's called, the Telegraph, which
that's
I think
right
is interesting.
The Dixon Telegraph.
And so he's talking about his great-great-great-uncle, or great-great-great-grandfather, and I might have missed the great in there. I get lost. And how he and, you know, he started after he was at Pony Express, he went into the newspaper business and went to Dixon and started a newspaper. And him and his buddies, you know, that own newspapers across the state of Illinois, and got together in private meetings to oppose slavery and how they were going to get President Lincoln to the White House.
Well,
and
I would say not president at that time.
Not at that time, right, exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. And they started the Republican Party and all this stuff. And we're like, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm starting to feel like I'm not accomplishing enough in my life. And he, so then he has, and he goes, these meetings were really serious because there was one man at a head of a paper in Rock Island that was killed by a man who was for slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And
so it was not
serious
a good
business.
Thing if they knew that you were anti-slavery.
No, it was serious business.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was scary times back then. And then he had a wife, and then he had a son, and he had three sons. And two of his sons didn't want to be in the newspaper business, and one of his sons did. And he got married. The son that did got married, had kids, and then he dies. And he dies before B.F. Shaw gives the paper to him. And so he ended up giving it to his wife. So she was now the head of this newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting because at that time, women couldn't even vote yet.
And here she was. He'd made her head of the newspaper.
I know. And I'm
That's
floored.
That's so cool.
And so, and then it passed on by generation and generation
mm-hmm.
and to now. And, you know, it's a pretty big deal. They have over 100 different titles, local papers mostly.
Mm-hmm.
The only that really makes money, I guess, in newspapers are local titles and local papers. And I just thought, oh, this is so wild. And I'm too darn lazy. I have it too good.
You were in condemnation of yourself.
I really was. And then so the next gentleman was a doctor, our surgeon in town, and there was an actor there portraying him. I don't
mm-hmm.
think they were related at all.
No.
So he was portraying him. And that got a little confusing because here he is right in front of me
mm-hmm.
and talking about his life and coming over from Ireland, which I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And he came over, made his way to Dixon, Illinois, because everyone said, go west, go west. And when they got to Dixon, Illinois,
and he kept saying
nothing.
Midwest.
Yeah, Midwest.
Go Midwest.
And during this time, he lost his brother and his father at the age of 15. He realized that he had to be the head of the head of his family. And
because he lost
family.
His dad, his
yeah.
brother. Yeah.
And so here he is, learning how to fish, hunt, finding friends, mentors, to teach him. Oh, that's really important to know.
Yes, yes.
And it's kind of interesting, because you've been channeling some things for me.
Yes.
And one of the things you've been channeling for me was, treat this as a business.
Right.
Treat this as a business. Lots of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I take notice because this gentleman was talking about, you know, he goes, and I treated this as a business,
mm-hmm.
taking care of my family.
Mm-hmm.
And I made sure I did what worked, didn't waste time on what didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, this is very interesting. And so he learned how to fish, hunt, learned how to grow crops, took care of his family. His sisters got married, and then he chose to go to further west, to California. For the gold rush. And by this time, though, so him and his buddies take off, and they take off with a couple of cows, I guess, cattle, and start walking that way, or however it's going.
And these are real cows.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And 2 years later, they get there.
They get to sunny California.
Yeah.
And it's not so much as a gold rush, but kind of a gold poke.
Yeah, exactly.
Just poking around.
It's a stroll. It's like that GNC commercial, you know, where you can either, you're running, then walking, then you're strolling, and then you're loitering. So I guess by this time, the rush became a loiter. And before, gold was just laying on the ground, and now gold had to be dug deep into the ground to get
mm-hmm.
the gold. And
which is really when we're going to talk to our author, our poet tonight. He's going to show us how to dig deep for the gold.
Yes.
And just putting it out there.
I'm glad you did. And because, I mean, one thing Robert McDowell talks about it is his mother, who was born, like, 1901, I think, came over from was it Ireland as well? I'm not sure, but from Europe. And her life growing up and how hard it was.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize that we kind of have, in this country right now, mm-hmm. our dilemmas, our problems, our situations, our conflicts, the things that really tug at our soul
mm-hmm.
are more on the spiritual side.
Yes.
Because we have the basics.
Right.
That Maslow hierarchy has been satisfied.
The hierarchy, that Maslow hierarchy is where the very S is. The end of it is, you know, your spiritual
quest. Your self-actualization.
Julie, go back to this doctor and tell how he became a doctor.
Yes.
But I want to hear the punchline, you know.
Oh,
I
yes.
know it
okay.
already. But,
you know it's fun. Okay,
yeah.
So anyway, he goes to California, and he's not having a good time. It's a lot harder than he thought. And one of his buddies realizes that he's got the inclination to help people, and he's smart enough. And he's inquisitive, and they go, here's a book, and it was a doctor's book about medicine at that time. And he just said, I read deeply into it, and I memorized everything, and I could help everybody. And so I got a little bit of gold together, a little bit of money, and I decided to, because it took another year and a half to get enough gold together, and he went to medical school, whatever that meant at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to medical school.
You got a hammer and a bottle of whiskey.
Yes.
And you could do stuff.
And then he went back to Dixon, Illinois, and was under a different doctor. He was the surgeon in town. And soon after this, the Civil War starts. And he says, at that point, I completely, you know, everybody in the cemetery, I worked on four times as many people as that are in the cemetery. That's how bloody the Civil War
yes.
was
well,
during
true.
This time.
Yeah.
And he said, what I had to realize is I had to treat it as a business because some of my peers were falling to the side because they couldn't take the emotional toll.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, if you couldn't take the emotional toll, they put you on the front line, which meant you
Whoa.
Died.
Whoa.
I know.
Really?
And I thought that was interesting.
Whoa.
If you can't take the emotional toll, then you're going to get out there
step
and be
up
our
to the front.
Yeah. Step up to the front. You will be our barrier.
I kind of always thought that was for the leaders.
No. It was for the people who were struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And
we shouldn't laugh. But,
no,
yeah.
but it. You, I wasn't laughing. I was laughing inside only in the sense of, like, you know, we got it so easy.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we struggle so much. Emotionally sometimes.
Yeah.
And like we're just at a different stage.
We really are.
And so here the story goes further. The war ends. He goes back to Dixon. And through this, he's a doctor. A little boy comes up to him in a doctor's office. And he goes, doctor, I have a laceration. And he goes, it was just a little cut. He called it a laceration. He was probably 10 years old. And the boy goes, well, how'd you do it? I was making shoes at the shoe company or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so he
goes, Dixon Shoe Company.
Yes, I don't know what it was, but he goes, I think you should actually work at the drugstore.
Because I see something more in you.
Yes, I see something more in you.
I see something more. I don't think you should be making shoes. I think you should go work at the drugstore.
Yes, and that boy was the first Mr. Walgreens.
Charles Walgreens.
Thank you.
Who not only started to work at the drugstore,
yes,
decided to buy the drugstore.
Own, and now he owns all of them.
Yes.
Walgreens.
But started in Dixon, Illinois.
Or at least the idea was birthed.
That's right.
And we've been talking, you and I, in our private moments about how you never know who you're going to touch and what that person will do with their life.
Right.
After you just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you get glimpses of the effect you've had on people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you should always, like, watch your tongue.
It's so true. I can remember
kind.
When I was a therapist, and you really don't know. And I remember doing a hypnosis session for this one older gentleman. He wanted to stop smoking, you know. And I think I was... You know, I just did my job, really. But, like, I don't know, 2 or 3 years later, I got a letter from him saying, you know, that changed my life. I was able to stop smoking. And since then, you know, time with grandkids. I mean,
yeah.
And you're like, wow, just that one thing.
Yes.
You know.
And so you never know. And you were blessed to have known that you changed
yes,
someone's life.
Yes.
Most of the time, we affect each other's lives, and we never find out.
Right.
And that, I mean, I'll say it right now. Oh, gosh, I can't remember her name. She was a radio talk show host. I can't think of her name. She did it like, you know, a self-help on, you know, 5 minutes.
What'd you say?
Oh, who is this woman's name? I can't
remember. Delilah?
No. She just does, it used to be on all the time. She just had people calling up, asking, talking about their problems.
Dr. Laura?
Thank you, Dr. Laura.
Oh, okay.
Oh, my gosh.
You're
I couldn't even think of her name.
Out.
Yeah. Thank you for helping me with that.
Yeah.
But one of the things that she said that I've never forgotten was you always have two chances to have a good mother-daughter relationship. Sometimes you're the daughter, sometimes you're the mother. And I always took that so sweetly because I haven't had a daughter of my own. I guess you can call them stepdaughters, but they're not, I love them, but they're not my, you know, they have a mom. But yours, our relationship is so deep that I don't feel lack.
And me neither.
So I don't feel like, oh, where's my mother-daughter relationship for me? I'm like, no, I have one. And guess what? It'll go on forever and ever, most likely, because I think we're part of the same soul family.
Yeah.
You know?
That's so, I thank you for that, because I...
Well, thank Dr. Laura for that.
Thank you, Dr. Laura. I know, because when I was doing just like my internal work and stuff, I used to always have this sort of archetype of, you know, motherless child.
Right.
And I just think, sometimes I feel, and, you know, and I would feel that, but then I, when I got it, that I could have this wonderful mother-daughter relationship, except I was the mother.
Right.
You know?
And so I just feel completely blessed, and this is a good time to start wrapping up this first half hour, because we're going to take a little break in a minute or so, because we want to bring in Robert McDowell, the poet, the activist, the speaker, storyteller, mentor, because he's going to share his story with us in the series Unwavering Strength. We're going to talk about his poetry. We're going to talk about his life.
We want to talk about life. We want to get to... We want to get into it. We want to dig for gold.
We want to dig
for gold. Yeah, we'll take all the gold that's just lying around if it's on top of the surface. But
No, not just that. You know us. Dive deep. No, like you were going to say.
Dive deep.
We dive deep.
Yeah, we're going deep. We're going deep. Right. We're going to find a vein.
Yes.
And we're going to dig deep. We're going to get rid of all the quartz, all the bauxite, all the other crap. And we're going to go right for the gold.
Yay.
Right for the gusto.
All right, everyone. We'll be back in a few. Enjoy the song.
I was a yay yay girl. 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 Back in France in the 60s, it was all so wonderful. We all played rock and roll and looked real cool.
Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome back to Life with the Girlfriends, more Life with the Girlfriends with Christine, Marie, and Julie. And you know what, Mom? I forgot to mention that we're the authors of The Clutterfly Effect.
You forgot.
Tweak
How
your
could
way
you?
A total transformation by decluttering your life. Yeah. You can get it on Amazon.
Amazon.com.
Just email us at talktous@ChristineMarieAndJulie.com when you purchase the book, and we'll send you the free audio. And it's us reading our book.
No way.
Yeah, way.
We're just celebs.
It's just awesome.
Yeah.
It's just, you know.
Can I say that we were number one for a long time?
Yes, you can say that.
All right, thank you.
I appreciate that. That's great. But right now we're going to be talking to, as we've been doing for the last several weeks, interviewing amazing authors for the Unwavering Strength Collection, the book that just came out a week and a half ago. And we're going to be interviewing Robert McDowell. He's a poet, activist, speaker, storyteller, mentor. He's also was doing a speech at the UN in Geneva.
But he's also a man after my own heart. I could, you know, I could just tell. He first of all, he looks like he could be in my clan.
Yes.
He could be like my brother or something. But I just have a grand feeling that we're going to have some fun tonight.
Well, and also, too, I love this. He goes, I am a man who believes men are created to love, celebrate, honor, work with, and serve women.
All right.
And I go, Robert, are you there? Because I love that about you.
thank you. Well, I am here, and I appreciate being here. It's great to be with both of you. And, yes, I believe that with all my heart.
Yay. Well, then, you know what? You're automatically, I invite you to be an honorary girlfriend then, Robert.
That's one of the greatest honors that could ever be bestowed on me. I accept.
There you go. I love that. I want to talk about your story briefly that you wrote in Unwavering Strength. It's called My Narrative Healing. And I want to get to your narrative healing, because one thing that you have, Robert, you have this way with words, and you can tell that you use poetry as a way to heal. It brought me, when I was reading over your website, robertmcdowell.net. I want everybody to go there after this interview, because it's a wonderful website.
Mm-hmm.
I remember this quote from John F. Kennedy, and he talked about poetry. And he says, when power leads men towards arrogance, poetry reminds him of his limitations. When power narrows the areas of man's concern, poetry reminds him of the riches and the diversity of existence. And when power corrupts, poetry cleanses.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert, reading your website, reading your poetry, I realize that you are a believer that poetry cleanses. And, you know, could you share a little bit about your story in Unwavering Strength and why you chose to share it with everybody?
Certainly. And I love that you begin with that quote from Kennedy, because I know that quote well, and I've loved it all my life. So it's always been encouraging to me.
Yes.
The story that I sent to Judy O'Byrne, the editor, of course, of Unwavering Strength, was called My Narrative Healing, and it's a story about my two deaths that rocked our family within 6 weeks of one another. My mother died of cancer, and 6 weeks later, my sister, closest in me to age, took her own life. And that the combination of the two events, of course, staggered the surviving immediate members of the family, my brother, my older sister, and myself. And we spent many years dealing with the fallout from particularly my sister's suicide. But also, of course, with the loss of our mother, we were a close family. And it was the five of us at the core. And to lose two members so quickly, in such a devastating way, was brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, certainly it was, both of the deaths played a part in guiding me to realizations over the years that writing and poetry can be tremendously therapeutic. And so in many, many workshops, in books, in seminars, at retreats, I have worked with people to process their own grief and their own obstacles around grief through the act of writing and through their own poetry and their own discovering their own stories to come to a place of what I call narrative healing, which is another way of saying that we can heal by telling our stories. And by listening to each other's stories.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so powerful the way you put it in your story, the narrative healing. And we, you know, I don't know where I read this, but I think in The Power of Happiness, I think, but I can't remember. But this idea that in Native American cultures, when you have this major crisis or grief in your life, sharing your story three times to someone is a way of beginning the healing process, getting it out. And using your words, writing things down, is like the way to begin this process.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, by the time you've gotten it all down, it becomes less or less numbing in some sense.
Well, you're right, because the story itself, I mean, we've all met and perhaps we're one of them, but at times, but you know, someone who has you haven't seen them in 4 or 5 years, and they're still telling the same story. So, you know, where is the healing? Where is the transformation that has you know taken that story and brought it and anchored it and you know, had the gravitas around it and made it transformational. You know, that's where, you know, as a therapist, that's what I would, you know, love to see. But a lot of times I think people still remain at just the storytelling.
Well, that can be true. The storytelling has to evolve. And I have found that one of the most healing acts is the communal aspect of sharing. Mm-hmm. If we can share stories in a constructive, safe setting, a feminine circle, if you will, people do change. People do, through feedback, through direct eye contact, through gesture and expression, find a way to morph from the spot at which they're stuck, and we all get stuck at different places, to a new place. You know, we never fully get over these tremendous losses in our life, but they're natural, they're part of life, and we do need to make use of them just as we need to make use of our shadows in order to find the true light and shine that light on our own lives and on the people closest to us, and if we're lucky and fortunate enough, on people that we influence or meet or work with briefly. One never knows. I mean, there are lots of examples of being attentive, being present for someone, and, you know, you don't really sometimes ever know what the effect you may have. Occasionally, you may hear from someone years later, you know, when you did this or when you did that, it really clicked me into a different gear, and it saved me in a lot of ways. And that's always such a humbling and joyful mm-hmm. thing to hear. So, you know, one of the things I always counsel is, you know, you never know completely the kind of impact you have in your life. So live a life of integrity and a life of staying on point and making yourself available and present at all times. And the breakthroughs will come. The whole point of telling your story, the whole point of writing it out, it's a cathartic process, and it does take you to a different place if you continue to do it, mm-hmm. and you continue to share it, because you do need the feedback.
I love that, the idea of the feedback, because it's more than just bearing witness to that person. It's like you said, by maybe just a small gesture or the eye contact that we swear you see into their soul, that is transformational.
Well, and with healing. with the eye contact, it almost is this verification that you're here with me in this present moment. I'm just not saying, and mm-hmm. by chance you may understand me. Mm-hmm. The eye contact really means, hey, I'm taking the time to really hear you.
Well, exactly. And like when Robert said that this, it's wonderful if it takes place like in a healing circle or a
yes.
circle where everybody is there. Nobody's running off to this or checking their, you know, text messages.
Exactly.
I mean, there is this sacred cauldron, if you will, where this can happen. And there is that element of deep safety.
Yes.
Right,
Robert.
I agree. And the safety... Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, that concept of safety is absolutely imperative. You know, everyone needs to feel safe before one can feel vulnerable. And everyone who feels vulnerable and expresses it, of course, is taking a great risk. You know, you're putting yourself out there and you're saying, basically, you're agreeing to be hurt. As sometimes we are when we make ourselves vulnerable at the wrong moment, mm-hmm. and we are hurt by someone else, mm-hmm. you know, we learn a lesson from that. But the lesson to be learned from that is not to clam up and go inward and just stay there.
Mm-hmm.
We have to keep trying. And even when we meet an inappropriate response or a response that wounds us further, that's a teaching moment. That's a learning moment. And we need to expand ourselves to the point where we can take that in and work with it and try another way. You know, try another way to reach that person. And that's what, I think that's a lot of what writing is all about. You know, writers continue to write. You can never
yes.
shut them up.
Yes.
And, you know, and they continue to write for that very reason, to get to the truth.
Yes. Well, you know, it, interestingly enough, Robert, when I was writing, you know, the my story in volume two, I started with one way, and then I realized, wait a minute, I didn't want to go that deep. I wasn't prepared to go as deep as I thought I was. You know, like, well, this is going to be my story for posterity, or, you know, whatever. But then as I started writing it, I was listening to the spirit in me saying, no, you don't need to tell this. I mean, I'm a therapist for, you know, 35 years now, so it's not like I haven't done any work. But so I didn't necessarily want to, you know, be digging this stuff up. So it became a bit of a different story than what I had anticipated. And because of that, I think I came as more what I gleaned from it, what my lessons were. And if I had to leave this for someone, here is what I hope, you know, the things that I learned, you know, could be, you know, helpful to you. And mine ended up being like about breaking the cycle, you know, in families with, you know, physical abuse and verbal, you know, abuse and things like that. So, rather than just like, you know, pulling it out of my back pocket, all the, you know, a lot of the stuff, I just sort of let that sort of be, and, you know, went to the idea of how we can break the cycle. And I told the story of really just Julie and I, because, you know, she didn't experience, except through her grandparents, I guess, you know, what some of the things that I had to go through.
Right, right.
Well, it's interesting, Robert, because reading your website, this is Julie, by the way, I know sometimes we sound very similar, Christy and I do, but when reading your website and learning more about you, I really felt that you and my mom had very similar stories growing up, as well as I know your importance of breaking the cycle and having a good relationship with your children, how important it was for you, and how initially it was kind of fearful, and then you were able to just say, you were able to do it. And so I want to honor that, because it takes someone really brave to say, I was kind of afraid to pass on what I did not want to pass on.
Right.
Right, that's exactly true, and my personal background was fraught with abandonment issues, a father who deserted the family when I was 5 and never saw him or heard from him again, and to this day don't even know what happened to him. And, you know, that weighed heavily on me as I approached having children. And, I really had to think about that. And my sister's suicide with 4 young children left behind even amplified that further, you know, the responsibilities we have as parents. But I love what you were saying about the responsibility of breaking the cycle. I do a lot of work with in the field of the history of violence against women. And just as I think, Christine Marie, as you were speaking, I think that suddenly took me there, where I realized that even in my story, an unwavering strength, part of my sister's great problem was, an abusive marriage.
Right.
And at the hands of a incredibly cruel and, bad man. There's no other way of putting it.
Right.
And, every family, it seems, is has a story. As some aspect of this in operation in this 2,000 years of patriarchy that we are coming to the end of. And breaking that cycle is a tremendous challenge. I think it's the biggest challenge we face on Earth, even more so than the ecological challenge, which I don't diminish at all. And even that, of course, is linked to a patriarchal system that believes that the Earth is here for us to use rather than to live with.
Yes.
And know, too many men in this world have felt the same way, that women are here to be used rather than to be lived with and to honor and work with and serve.
Absolutely.
And I'm glad to be a man who believes that I'm working,
yeah,
at least trying what I can do to break that cycle.
Well, I thank you for that, because even, you know, growing up, in the, you know, 60s and 50s as a Catholic girl going to Catholic school, I mean, I was sort of, we had to be good girls. You know, that was, and there was no thinking for yourself. I mean, and in the archetype that I was most comfortable in my family and in church, was that of a martyr. I mean, it was just to suffer, you know, in silence. And so, you know, to hear what you say, it really is fresh air, and we want this for ourselves and our daughters and our granddaughters and our grandsons and too.
And our grandsons, yes, and our sons.
Yes.
You know, we really want a world, want to leave behind a world that is more open and expansive to a gender-enlightened view of cohabitation. Rather than, I mean, it's a tragedy, you know, to be able to say that your role model was that of the martyr, and I understand it perfectly.
Yes.
Myself being a former Catholic, or excuse me, a lapsed Catholic. But, you know, I understand the teachings very well, that it's a very patriarchal system. You know, finally, there was a pope that's actually making some strides, you know, to change that.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for that, but how slow it is, you know, and how tiny the steps forward are. And it's very frustrating. I think it's been very frustrating for women for centuries. And women today are really breaking out. I mean, women today are butterflies. They are breaking out of that cocoon, finally. And they're taking the world to a better place. And the men who have any savvy at all and are at all trainable are going to get it and get with it and raise their games and go with them.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, they're going to be very lonely men.
Yeah. And nothing to be afraid of. I mean, I love this sense of raising your game.
Yes.
And there's nothing to be afraid of, guys. You can do it.
And you can think, you can, you know, when I was, when I made my confirmation, my role model that I took the name of St. Teresa, Teresa, because that at that point was, you know, like, oh, that's the saint that I want to, you know, you could still feel that, you know, the patriarch, you know, or you had to be sort of, a mystic. You had to be sort of kind of insane a little bit, you know, to
right.
that was okay then, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, that it, again, even that model though separates the woman, you know. Yes, well, oh, you know, she's this and she's that, and that's out of the norm, but it's okay because she's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rather than saying that. You know, I mean, what men need to wake up to is a simple fact. And, you know, now we have brain science to back this up. The brain science is there for anyone to access. One need not be a scientist or, you know, have a PhD from MIT to get it. But we now know that, you know, the seven parts, there are eight key parts of the brain. Five of them are much bigger in women than in men. Now, the simple result of that is to be able to say women are smarter. And function more quickly and with more decisiveness and with more wisdom than men do. Now, the good news for men is that the parts of their brains that are smaller can be, and we've learned this in meditation studies, can be developed and grown, increased, so that you have more equality, more equanimity.
Hmm.
So in other words, men can, and that's what I mean by men raising their games. The first thing men have to do is admit women are smarter. Women are just intuitively and logically smarter. And they have the bigger picture in mind much more quickly than men do. But
yeah.
Men can learn. But what has to happen in a lot of cases is women must teach them. Women must lead them. And there is the problem. There are many women today who are fully capable, and I know many of them, thought leaders who are internationally renowned. Some of them are pretty ticked off about men and are not particularly interested in leading them. Mm-hmm. You know, and yeah, men, you know, and then there are a lot of men who are totally befuddled by what's going on now. And I've talked to hundreds, if not thousands, of them everywhere. And you know what I hear most often from men who at least are willing to have the conversation? They almost all say, well, you know, I want to be involved with women. I want to work with women, but I just don't know how to get in. I don't know what to do.
Housework.
Doesn't that sound... Housework is right. That's a start, and I say that. I say, well, you know... Well, you know, when was the last time you did the dishes? I mean, do you do the dishes every day? Do you clean the house? Do you expect your partner or your wife to do things around the house and you while you're, you know, watching the football game? And if the answer is yes, you know, the first thing you suggest is, well, turn off the TV and pick up a mop.
Mm-hmm. That's sexy.
Well, it is. It is, and women will say that all the time, you know?
I know.
I mean, it's not necessarily sexy for a man to say, you know, wonderful, flowery things to a woman and then go back to the TV. You know, it's much sexier if a man has got on, you know, ripped jeans and a T-shirt and is mm-hmm. cleaning the house.
100%.
Mom, I don't know if I should say it or not, but... I'm just adoring Robert more and more. I mean, as he's talking, I know he's gone from a 10 to 10 plus plus to 10 plus plus plus.
The meter keeps going up.
Yes, I don't even know what to say. Robert, you're getting cooler and cooler, man. I just thank you so much. That's awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, I wish I was the perfect, almost perfect man that I describe or try to talk about, but I can only emulate him. I mean, I make mistakes all the time, and I too am a product of 2,000 years of patriarchal patterning.
Right.
And as a man, you know, I certainly had my fill of it. And I come up against it all the time. You know, blind spots. Oh, why did I do that? Why did I say that? You know, it's a slow and painful process often, but it's also exhilarating because mm-hmm. one can make progress and one can see it in one's daily life, you know, if you mm-hmm. make some progress. Mm-hmm. You know, when a woman begins to react to you in a different way, in a more gender-enlightened way, and you to her in the same way, that's heaven, you know. I mean, there's no heaven afterwards. Heaven's right here.
You bet. It just feels like a beautiful flower that keeps unfolding and unfolding more and more. And there's just, like you said, there's more enlightenment there. And who knows where, you know, because I'm very intuitive, and I love that part of my brain. And I, when I'm honored with it, when people, you know, it seems to burst open even more. And that, like I said, who knows where it can lead to. So, Robert, you'll have to tell us if you're ever in the Midwest. We want to come see you, listen to if you're going to be reading some poetry or whatever. We want to come see you.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I will definitely let you know that. I would love to do that. I like to travel and visit other places and meet as many people as I can, so that would be great. I will say about the opening of the flower, I love that metaphor, and it's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
This book series that Judy O'Byrne has put together, Unwavering Strength, is just that kind of flowering opening, bringing together so many authors from so many different backgrounds, sharing stories that are all about overcoming obstacles and dealing with grief and dealing with loss and dealing with pain. The first book is very helpful. And I'm sure the second book will be great, and all the books in the series will be terrific. So her creation of this series is a great contribution to the fertilization of that flower.
I totally agree, and we, you know, it helps us to, you know, understand. We've talked to so many authors, and they'll have this defining moment. You know, I'm on my knees in my bedroom, or they'll say, you know, one guy was, you know, in a ship and it was being tossed. And but there are all these defining moments when we access that deeper and deeper unwavering strength, and from that, you know, we can begin, you know, that leg of the journey, that new journey, as opposed to, you know, just you know, feeling like the, you know, the loser that we are, you know.
Right. Yes, exactly. I mean, we transform that, and we realize that the voice is telling us we're losers. Of course, that's the dark shadow of our ego talking to us, and mm-hmm. that can be dispelled. It is not reality. But the reality is we're simply right here in the moment, and we have choice at any given moment. How am I going to act? What am I going to say? How am I going to react to this person or interact with this person? And that is glory. That's a glory. That's a terrific opportunity.
Yeah.
And we just have to be present and as truly go back to looking into one another's eyes. Mm-hmm. You know, if you really do that deeply, you can't lie, and you can't evade. You have to be there.
Absolutely.
You know, this is why so many times people in conversations won't look you in the eye. They're looking off to the right. They're looking off to the left mm-hmm. because they don't want to. You know, they're protecting themselves. They don't mm-hmm. want to be that vulnerable. But when mm-hmm. you truly look into each other's eyes, you are making a pact of vulnerability and a pact that says, I'm here to help you. I'm here to listen. Mm-hmm. I hope you're here to listen to me and help me.
Mm. I feel like we've only scratched the surface, Julie. This is I want to invite you back because there's so much. We were talking before you came on about digging for gold. And we were talking about the California gold rush and how initially that the gold was just on the ground. You didn't have to dig for it. But then as you know, that you had to start digging and finding these veins for the gold. And that's what we see in you, that this that we can dig for the gold.
And we've struck a vein, that's for sure. The vein, the gold is there. And Robert, you can find out more about Robert McDowell at his website, robertmcdowell.net. And he has one-on-one coaching, does group coaching. He has several books, does speaking, teaching. I really want to compel you to go to his website, robertmcdowell.net. And I'll just leave you with this. He talks about writing is witnessing, and it's confession, and writing is also empathy. And I love the way you write, and I love your poetry, the poem about that you wrote for your sister. And
there really is healing in your writing. Just, I don't know how you do it, but there's just healing in there, and it touches my soul.
And we want everybody to go
to Thank you so much.
Yeah, unwaveringstrength.com, too, to purchase the book. Or you can go to Amazon and purchase the book, Unwavering Strength, where you can get his story and many, many others about unwavering strength. So, Robert, before we let you go, which I really don't want to, I know we've taken more of your time than I told you we would take, so I apologize right now. And I want to say thank you, Engineer, for letting us go a little bit longer.
Yes, thank you, sir.
Before we go, any last parting words for our audience?
Well, I would just say love each other, care for each other. Thomas Merton, the great poet and monk, once wrote that if we just did that, what would we do? We would have to fall down and worship one another.
Yes. Yeah. Love one another as I have loved you. Yes. Beautiful.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Thank you
for having me on the show, and I'd be happy to come back anytime. It's great to talk to you both.
And, you bet. Thank
you. And I've got two new girlfriends now.
Yay!
You do.
Have a wonderful, wonderful Sunday night, Robert.
Yeah. Thank you, Robert, so much. Really. Thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you, and thank you for the work you both do.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Ah, yum, yum. That was awesome.
Yeah, I know. Thank you, Engineer, for letting us go along.
Yes. And so, everyone, we want to say you can go see us at theclutterflyeffect.com or ChristineMarieAndJulie.com. And you can also go to robertmcdowell.net, not .com, I went to .com first, and it just said, there are hundreds and hundreds of Robert McDowells, and you may want to buy this
mm-hmm.
website.
But we only know the real one.
RobertMcDowell.net.
That's right.
And UnwaveringStrength.com as well. So lovely radio show as always, Mom, but tonight felt invigorating.
Yes, cool.
To be honored by God.
Plumb the depths of our soul.
Yes. So thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful, wonderful night.
And you know what? It was great.
And it was great.
It was great.
It was great. It was great.